high, it is far, it is gone to win the game.
The Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
And welcome into this week's episode of the Nosebleeds Podcast. This is WFUV Sports' exclusive baseball podcast. We had our inaugural episode of the season last week, so we're continuing with that. We're rolling on. Spring training keeps progressing. We're getting closer and closer to the season, which I believe is 3 weeks from yesterday at the time of recording, so we're less than 3 weeks away from opening day, which is very exciting in the world of baseball. I'm Brian Rabax. Today, I'm joined by Sebastian Seabach and Evan Harkin. Guys, now we have like a full week of spring training games underway. How much of it have we watched? I know some people like to tune in, but it's still spring training, and I don't know. We're all baseball guys. Have we at least like watched any of it?
I can proudly say I've not watched a single spring training game.
Wow. Proudly, too.
Proud.
What makes you so proud?
Well, you know, this is a time for the younger guys to kind of put their name forward, and this is a time for other guys that, you know, are currently struggling or have struggled in the past, you know, kind of revamp themselves a little bit, kind of prove that they still got it. So, you know, it's not really a time, spring training is not really a time for where guys shine, it's just a time for where guys get their reps. And you can see that from both teams we're going to talk about today, the Yankees and the Mets, in which they're going to have plenty of players in which they're going to be doing that.
Yeah, I'm super excited to talk baseball. I said it about 10 times coming in. I can't wait to not talk basketball because I feel like that's the only sport there's been to talk about that in hockey. But as a pretty big baseball fan, I haven't been watching the games, but I've been seeing clips, Brian. A lot of clips all over the different social media, watching Spencer Jones hit some nukes.
Yeah.
Austin Wells hit a nuke. Juan Soto, some balls that look like they should be 250-foot fly balls flying out of the stadium. So pretty cool to see some of the stuff from the Yankees and the Mets, even when you can't sit down and watch a game, you know, get to see clips.
For sure, and we'll start off with the Yankees. Before we get into, like, our main topic of discussion here, I mean, can we talk about Soto and the spring that he's having so far?
Unbelievable.
He's hitting, like, 700 going into yesterday, and he's got 5 extra base hits, 3 homers, 2 doubles. Like, this guy is unreal. He's got an OPS in the 2000s, just... I know it's spring training, but as a Yankee fan, like, can you just dream of like what this lineup's going to be when he's producing at his top level, like the talent he is?
I mean, don't worry, Brian, because Kevin Youkilis hit over 300 in spring training back in 2013 he played for the Yankees. So, you know, don't get your hopes up too quickly right there. But yes, Juan Soto is a phenomenal player. And this is a glimpse of the kind of player we've seen over the ever since he's came up to the big leagues back in 2018. Last year, you know, 35 homers. This year, he's going to have the short porch in right field. Mm-hmm. He has 4 career homers at Yankee Stadium. And, well, I should say 2 of them are no cheapies either. But, you know, yes, very impressive so far. I don't think this is a good sign because what it shows is that, you know, the Yankee pinstripes is not going to put any pressure on him at all.
I think it's a really good sign. I think it's more than just doing good in spring training because, you know, Juan Soto, one of the biggest names in baseball, the biggest teams in baseball, if he's doing bad, everyone's going to know. If he was doing poorly in spring training, it'd be all over Twitter. It would be bad for the Yankees' mojo, the Yankee dugout. I think it would cause bad buzz. So him hitting 700, you could just see the difference in his swing compared to almost every other player in the league. Is very similar to Aaron Judge, the way they can just sit in the driver's seat and wait for the perfect pitch. So I think it shows a glimpse, a little foreshadow of what Juan Soto hopefully can bring for the season if you're a Yankee fan.
And he's just making it look so easy, too. Yeah. Like, just it feels like every single time he's up there, he's either, like, flying out to the warning tracks or, like, just missing one, or he's hitting a home run, he's hit one the opposite way, he's hitting him off the scoreboard in left center. Like, he's just an incredible hitter. And so far, he's given Yankee fans just a lot of reason to be really hopeful for what he can do and what he can add to the rest of this lineup. But outside of Soto, when you look at this Yankees team, I think they're going to be better this year just based on some of the additions that they have made. But I think a lot of the Yankees improving this season is going to rely on them getting bounce back years from some guys. And we're focusing on a few people in spring training. So I had around four guys in mind, maybe five, that might need to have bounce back. Let's limit it to four. So we have four guys that need to have bounce back years for the Yankees. They did not have good years in 2023. And these are guys that were all former All-Stars too, mm-hmm. and are not used to playing poorly like they have been. So we can just run through them. So we'll just kind of evaluate everybody to start. And then at the end, I think we can just rank them from who's most important that needs to bounce back to like who can they survive if they're not very good. So let's start with Giancarlo Stanton. This is a guy who has been an MVP. Mm-hmm. He led the league in home runs in 2017. He's the active MLB home run leader.
Is he?
All time? I know. It was because I didn't know it either. And I was watching the Yankee game yesterday, and they showed on the screen that he has 402, and that's the active.
I feel like people now that
Miguel Cabrera retired.
Right. Yeah. So it's like Pujols and Miguel Cabrera retired the last couple of years.
That makes
sense. It kind of puts him there. But last year was by far his worst season as a pro. Just not the kind of numbers we're used to seeing from Giancarlo Stanton, hitting in around the 190s and just not being productive at all. So when you look at him, he's coming in a lot more lean, different physique, mm-hmm. different off-season approach this year. So just what do we think of Stanton in 2024? Is he going to be able to recapture some of that prime Stanton prestige talent that we saw?
I mean, if you mean by is he going to hit home runs, the answer is yes. Is he still going to strike out a lot? The answer is also yes. And what you're going to see from Stanton is you're not going to see the same Stanton as we saw when the Yankees first got him coming off that 59 home run season and had a pretty good year after that. Mm-hmm. He's going to be still a liability in the field. He's still going to be slow, unfortunately, although maybe a little bit better. And, you know, there's still going to be a problem with plate discipline because that's something that takes time to correct as well. So, and he's on the wrong side of 30. He is mm-hmm. 34 now. So I think, you know, there's definitely a lot to be concerned with Stanton because 33 is an age where a lot of players do hit a significant decline, and that's something that you see it with Stanton. These past 2 years, mm-hmm. 1.5 years, ever since he went back on the disabled list in 2022.
I think because his role is a lot less now than what he was asked to do last year, he will have a significantly better season. I think he's going to hit over 200. I mean, that's safe to say, usually, for Giancarlo Stanton besides that one season.
Well, not anymore.
That's what I'm saying, besides last year.
He was at a 191.
I think this year, I also see a lot of mock lineups where he is nowhere near the spot he used to be in the three hole and the four hole.
The other day in spring training, he was hitting
seven,
sixth.
Right? Six, seven,
I think
yeah.
he was hitting sixth. And like some projected lineups can have him down at seven.
All the way down there. I like that because Stanton, although he's a guy who plays better in the playoffs, plays better against rivals, so he's not someone who you have to keep away from the moment. I really like having him in this spot where he doesn't have to be Aaron Judge's savior every time behind Aaron Judge when they walk him to pitch around him. Now Juan Soto's back there. Hopefully Anthony Rizzo's back. And in terms of the outfield, Trent Grisham's the fourth outfielder right now, so Juan Soto's the fifth, and when Dominguez comes back, Giancarlo Stanton's the fifth, and when Dominguez comes back, he'll be the sixth in the outfield. He shouldn't be playing out there at all. So hopefully with less of a role, he'll have a better season.
All right. He's the worst defender, I think, in that outfield you look at
probably the
talent that they have.
Maybe in the league. It's bad.
And then just the health concerns, too. I think that's what's really hindered him the last couple of years is just, the injuries. And when you're looking at the age where he is 34 now, but I think him getting hurt isn't the issue. It's the way he's coming back from getting hurt. Because if you remember, last year, he was having a pretty good April, and then he had the injury, and then he was just terrible when he came back and had no semblance of any, hot stretch, really. He was just bad the whole season. So it's hard for me to look at that and not assume he's going to get hurt again, and then it just feels like he's going to be a liability. And, I think he can hit, 230 and provide 30 homers, but the way that Yankee fans operate and where how they are, it feels like he's going to be a conversation all year long, especially when Jason Dominguez starts to get close to coming back. But then you don't know. Maybe he has to play because knowing the Yankees, everyone seems to get hurt every now and then. So there might be a way for Stanton to like really have a role. But also, if he doesn't hit well and everyone's healthy, I think he kind of knows that he's in a lot of trouble and won't get playing time because the Yankees don't have to.
He's nowhere, like I said, nowhere near the guy that has to hit behind Judge anymore. So even if he's playing poorly, like you said, the Yankees have guys that can kind of get in there. They're not looking for Stanton to be there too. It's Juan Soto now, which they desperately needed. It was really hard to watch pitchers blatantly pitch around Judge with runners on second base in situations you shouldn't pitch around anybody because they're not scared of anybody else in the lineup. So for Stanton's sake, I really think that just having so much less need. He doesn't need to do nearly as much as he ever had to as a Yankee.
And again, you kind of bring up the point, like, you know, Stanton pre-injury. You look back at the last 2 years. Last year, he was hitting over 260 before that injury in April. 2022, he was hitting over 290 before that injury in late of May 2022.
Right.
After the end, like toward the end of the season, when he came back from injury, hit below 200 both times.
Yeah. That's kind of what I'm afraid of at this
that's
point.
Been a story.
But who knows? Maybe the different off season where he's got slimmer, like maybe that'll help him stay on the field. But also just watching him run the bases last year,
it's hard to watch.
So bad, and it's like he's not running full speed because he doesn't want to get hurt.
Maybe he is running full speed.
We don't know. His sprint speed is just consistently dropping off because he used to have decent speed.
He used to be above average too.
Right. We'll see how he ends up, but we're going to have to move it along because we have a lot of Yankees that really need to bounce back. So let's go to DJ LeMahieu. There were a lot of points last year where DJ just really did not look like the DJ of old, even at all. Like really in like the summer months, he went through like a massive struggle and he finished the year 243 hitter, 718 OPS, on base percentage 327, and DJ is usually like a 400 on base guy, but really not last year. So he's another guy that's gonna probably be, as of right now, looks like he's gonna be plugged in at the top of the lineup and is slated to be their third baseman as of right now. He can obviously play everywhere, but if the Yankees are going to get to where they want to be, they're going to need some consistency from hitters outside of Judge and Soto, and DJ is kind of one of the X factors where if he's good, the Yankees have a chance to be really good.
Well, I think, you know, DJ, you're not going to get the same DJ that you got back in 2019 and 2020, in which he won the batting title in 2020 and was second in 2019. The DJ you're going to get is going to have to hit 270. He's going to have a 360 on-base percentage, and he's going to have to hit with runners in scoring position.
And you know what? I think every Yankee fan would take that.
Exactly. Yeah. Every day of the week. And since 2021, DJ has just not hit with runners in scoring position. Recently, the past couple of years, he has been taking his walks, he has been getting on base, but the one thing that concerns me about him last year was his strikeouts. His strikeout percentage was up at least 10%, and he 125 strikeouts last year, by far the largest in his career. Well, he's only struck out 100 times a season twice, and that was back in 2015 when he was an all-star with the Rockies. So there's a reason to be concerned right there with him. And also his athletic ability too. Same thing with Stanton. It's getting worse. He's getting older. So there's definitely reason to be concerned, but it's probably not the most concerning Yankee on this list.
Oh no, I don't think it's the most concerning Yankee. Like you said, I mean, 35 years old, he's not going to be nearly the same athletically as he was at 25, 27 years old. What we need is a leadoff hitter. That's what the Yankees need, is the leadoff hitter. They have Juan Soto, they have Aaron Judge. The question is Gleyber Torres or DJ LeMahieu. That's kind of what everybody's hoping, that DJ really comes up and takes that spot, because Gleyber really isn't a contact hitter the way DJ is. You know, when the shift was the biggest thing in baseball, one of the only people that didn't get a shift was DJ LeMahieu, because he could put the ball wherever he wanted to on the field in 2020. Now the shift's banned, not that they shift him anyway, but now it seems like he can't even put contact to the ball. Hopefully for him, just getting the ball into the field and, like you said, eliminating those strikeouts.
I mean, but that's what happens when bat speed gets slower over the years. You know, you kind of lose his hard hit percentage is down, and his strikeouts are up as well.
Yeah.
And he's just not hitting the ball as hard.
Yeah, 35, so less torque,
yeah,
all that.
Definitely,
yeah,
definitely,
and strikeouts, 125, most in his career. But he did kind of have a August and September that kind of reflected the DJ we're used to. So really, it's just about consistency with LeMahieu. Can he possibly get back to any semblance of an all-star that he was in his first year in New York? I don't know, but kind of like I was saying, the Yankees just need like a 270 out of him. He just needs to be pretty good. And listen, he's 35. They're not paying him that much money. If he's like pretty solid and continues the nice end to the year that he had last year, I think the Yankees will be in a good spot.
Yeah, he had a three-week stretch last year,
right,
which he hit 8 home runs.
Yeah. And the power is like kind of there at some points, like really towards the end of the year. I remember he had a series in Tampa where he was just hitting balls and he was pulling them too. So we don't know. We don't know what kind of DJ we're going to get this year, but if he's consistent and just the DJ that the Yankees, he's putting the ball in play and he's getting on base, the Yankees will do just fine. Now, looking at Anthony Rizzo now, and this is the last hitter that we're going to get into, but I think Rizzo's the one guy who, I don't know if his poor output last season was due to necessarily a decline in talent. I think that the concussion that he had obviously impacted him, and if there's one guy over any that I'm going to bet, like, he's going to have a much better year this year, he's going to have a bounce back year, for me, it's got to be Anthony Rizzo. I mean, this is his first another year where he doesn't have to deal with shifts, so expect his average to go back up. And if as long as he's healthy and he's not dealing with the symptoms of the concussion that he had, the power will come back and he'll be seeing the ball a lot better. So I'm actually excited for Rizzo this year, and I think that, yeah, he can be plugged in the 4-5 hole in the lineup, and he'll just be a nice presence there and be consistent.
Yeah, hopefully he's going to be Anthony Rizzo. He totally was not last year, but I totally agree that I think he's going to be one of the guys that's going to have such a big change, because you can look at something, which is the concussion. It's not a question kind of what turned him wrong, because the exact date of the concussion, his batting average flips a switch. Like, if you look at the exact date that he had the undiagnosed correctly, just concussion, it's like night and day between those two points.
I mean, you kind of look at his production, too. I mean, he had, what, 5 RBIs coming down the stretch after his concussion.
Yeah.
So it was a massive decline in that as well. And plus, his on-base percentage, even with the higher average, was lower than it was in 2022. So he definitely wasn't seeing the ball.
No, he certainly was not. And he kind of like attested to that when he got shut down for the season last year in August with the concussion. And he kind of joked and was like, well, at least it's not like a I'm getting worse thing. It's just that, like, I had, like, issues where I couldn't really see. But that's the thing. Like, Rizzo's been, like, a bat-to-ball kind of guy, and he's prone to be more successful with the lack of shifts. Like, when they banned the shift prior to last year, the two guys who everyone kind of pointed out, like, they're going to benefit the most was Anthony Rizzo and Corey Seager. And
look at Corey Seager.
Seager certainly had a great year now that he doesn't have to deal with shifts. And Rizzo was hitting like 300 before the concussion. So if the Yankees get that, I think not many people are putting enough stake into, obviously, they have Judge, they have Soto, and those two guys are going to dominate. But I don't think a lot of Yankee fans are really putting enough stock into what like a healthy and productive Anthony Rizzo can add to this lineup. It could be huge.
Yeah, it would make all the difference. I mean, we saw Rizzo 2 years ago be the guy behind Judge, the guy you couldn't pitch around Judge because now you're going to get the Anthony Rizzo. He's putting balls out of Yankee Stadium like he had been prior to this concussion. You mentioned the shift. Everybody was going to the right side of the field because he has that chop swing where he absolutely does not use the left side of the field at all. So all the odds are in favor for Anthony Rizzo to step up, and I don't see any reason you can give for him not to step up this year from last year.
And, you know, he's the one guy that benefits probably the most from Yankee Stadium, that short porch in right field. Yeah, there's a reason why he cracked 32 homers last year. There's a reason why 10 out of his first 11 or 11 out of his 12 homers last year were at Yankee Stadium because of that short porch.
The short porch is certainly going to help a left-handed hitter like Rizzo, and he's had good years with the Yankees. Like in 2021, when he got traded over, he was a solid bat. And even in 22, the average wasn't there, but he still had the power numbers. And then last year, the power numbers just really were not there. Slugging was way down. He slugged 480 in 2022. Last year was 378. So that's 100 points lower. So if they can find a happy medium where Rizzo's just the player that he used to be, then the lineup will be productive. So we got through all of our hitters. Let's go to a really interesting case here, and one guy that I just can't figure out, and it's Carlos Rodon. Carlos Rodon had an abysmal first season with the Yankees, and I don't even know if there's any way that like it could have gone worse. 6.85 ERA. He missed a bunch of starts, only started 14 games, but now this year he comes into camp. His velocity was apparently up, but now in spring games his velocity is just back to like 93. So really, guys, like, what do we expect from Carlos Rodon? I won't lie, from what I've seen this spring, and you, I don't know what you guys feel, and you can respond, but I'm not very optimistic with Rodon in 24.
No, I'm not very optimistic either with Rodon. You kind of look at the past years he's had. He's had some good years, especially early on in his career, but then it's just injury after injury after injury, and he's really only had two sub-3 ERA seasons. So I think, you know, there's a reason to be concerned that he's not going to bounce back. You saw the last start. The velocity was down. And
he was giving up homers.
And he was giving up homers, just like he did back last year as well. So, yeah. You know, and I think, you know, the one thing that Yankee fans all want from him, what the Yankees are looking for him, is strikeouts. Last year, wasn't really getting the strikeouts, to be in all honesty, like the Yankees wanted. Giving up too many hits, leaving fastballs right down the middle, and he just does not have necessarily the control, because he's more type of guy that relies on velocity and stuff, and he just does not have it.
Yeah, huge relier on velocity, which he just doesn't have anymore. I mean, I think there were false reports, Brian, because
there must have been.
You can't say he's throwing 99 and then he goes out a week later and he throws 92. It doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, maybe a couple miles per hour on a bad day, but like I saw the reports too. I was super excited. I was like, oh, we're going to get the Carlos Rodon back. I don't think so either at this point. I mean, I saw that start. It looked exactly how he looked last season, just unable to find the command. And Gerrit Cole's the type of pitcher that can get away with throwing fastballs down the middle of the plate. He could throw 98, 99. Rodon's used to that, too. He's used to being a guy that can get away with leaving something over the middle of the plate. You can't do that throwing 92, so nothing looks good for him.
No, and the home runs are still prevalent, and it's kind of, like, upsetting. Like, I was watching on Twitter, I saw a video of Rodon, like, pumping 99 when he was with the Giants. Like, that's the pitcher that the Yankees, like, envisioned that they were getting, and last year, they certainly didn't get that, and hopefully Rodon ends up being healthy, but I think with the way things are going, like, he's really got to prove himself this year. So we've talked about these four guys. Now I want to rank them. So we could start with just the most important piece that we feel is crucial for the Yankees to be successful. Who needs to have a bounce-back season the most? And for me, top of the list, Carlos Rodon. If Carlos Rodon has a bounce back year where he's like a really good number two behind Gerrit Cole, like, this Yankees team can go so far into the postseason if they have another legit arm. So Carlos Rodon for me is number one.
Well, yeah, I agree with that too. And I say that because, you know, the starting rotation is probably the most questionable part of this Yankees team. Right. You know, with the lineup and the additions they have, you know, they kind of did fix some holes a little bit. You know, they got Verdugo out, who is a contact hitter. They got Soto out, who is also a contact hitter. Carlos Rodon, you expect him to kind of be the number two guy. Right now, the number two guy is Nestor Cortes, not Carlos Rodon. So after Nestor, who's going to be the number three? Mm-hmm. Marcus Stroman is technically going to be the number three the way Rodon pitched last year, but Marcus Stroman was technically worse than the Yankees' fifth starter 2 years ago. So, you know, Carlos Rodon is the guy that needs to step up and bounce back. It's probably more important than any other guy on that list if the Yankees want to make a postseason run.
Yeah, I agree that the starting rotation is definitely the question mark here. But you mentioned a couple other guys, Stroman, Nestor Cortes. Cortes, an all-star, one of the best pitchers in the league.
He has to bounce back,
too. A couple years ago,
He has to bounce back, too.
Exactly. I think there's more room for other pitchers to maybe step up. Say Rodon is having the season we're expecting. Maybe Stroman and Cortez can be a good 2 and 3. I think DJ LeMahieu is a little bit more important because if this Yankee lineup is going to be elite the way it should be, they need a guy to get on base in front of those big hitters.
True.
We can't have Anthony Volpe up there, you know, hoping he walks, hoping he can steal a base. You need a solidified guy the pitchers are scared to pitch to in front of those two beasts.
Yeah, the way that I think I'm going to rank it after Rodon, so I got Rodon number one, and then 2, I think I'll go Rizzo, and then 3, DJ, 4, Stanton. Stanton is unquestionable. Rizzo and DJ might be interchangeable, but I think
that.
Stanton is like definitely at the bottom. And why? Because the Yankees, they have now like
5 outfielders.
Contingency plans.
He's the 5th outfielder.
If Stanton's not doing well, you're just going to sit on the bench. You're not going to play.
No, they'll probably cut him after this year, too.
Well, yeah, it's just like now, I think like he's got 4 years left on his contract.
Yeah, I mean,
gosh,
there's a lot of money that they're going to have to eat if they end up cutting him.
They cut Hicks 3 years after his contract. I mean, despite that, Hicks was owed less money.
Hicks was owed less money. That's the big thing.
Yeah.
And Stanton, I don't know. I think it's going to be a mess all season long, where even if he's like okay, people are still going to be frustrated. Yeah. And
I mean, look what they did with Ellsbury. Ellsbury had 3 years left on his contract.
Ellsbury, they just didn't let him come back.
Yep.
They're like, no, quietly, you can just go. So that was a whole thing. But the Yankees have a lot of players that could use bounce back years, and whether we're going to get that, we'll have to see.
And the good thing about Stanton too is that they paid most of his the highest years of his salary already. Mm-hmm. So the salary is going down for the next 3 years.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to the Mets. The Mets, you know, there's kind of like a weird, like, they might be good if things go well, but they're also not really going all in because they had chances to make legitimate offseason moves, and they did not really do that. So right now they're in just a very strange, like, territory where, I don't know, their additions were Tyrone Taylor and Harrison Bader for the most part, but I don't really know what that does. And then offensively, but their pitching, they made some moves, and now some of these additions that they brought into their rotation, they're going to have to step up because Kodai Senga, the way it's looking, he's going to miss a month, maybe 2 months with the way it's going. His shoulder injury, I mean, when I saw that news break, I had a feeling that he was going to be out for longer than just opening day. So he's starting the season on the IL, and now we look at this rotation and who's going to be the guy to step up. They have new pieces in Hauser, Manaea, Severino, and then returners in Jose Quintana and Tyler McGill. But, I mean, you look at like those five names I listed, does anyone jump out and scare you that can really be a number one starter and ace in this league, even as a placeholder? I'm not seeing it.
Not at all. Like, not even close. There's no name in there that I think could be an ace on almost any team. I mean, Kodai Senga, I think, definitely is an ace after his season last year, rookie season, very good. But you look up and down that lineup, it makes you question, like you were saying, why aren't you going and getting Blake Snell? Why aren't you getting some of these pitchers that are out there that are an ace? Or
and Steve Cohen has the money.
Yeah, or it would be an ace on your team, that's for sure. So a lot of questions if you're the Mets. Kind of in purgatory right now is how I would say the Mets are looking. You're not up, you're not down, you're just there, not doing much.
Yeah, I think you see a lot of guys that have been hurt over the past couple of years in Severino and Sean Manaea. So, you know, guys that definitely used to be great, but are definitely shells of themselves. So I wouldn't be surprised if I see the starting rotation without Senga have the 6 ERA to start the season within the first 2 months. So, the one guy I can think off the top of my head is Adrian Hauser. Adrian Hauser is probably the one, probably your best chance to be able to step up because he's definitely the guy that can give you the most innings. And he's the one guy that has had a good year recently, back in 2021, 3.22 ERA. So that's really the one guy off the top of my head that is probably going to need to step up for the Mets once Senga's out.
It is pretty crazy, though. Like, Adrian Hauser is going to be your opening day starter.
Yeah.
And then, like, from there, like, I feel like you're getting the same thing when you look at, like, Manaea, McGill, Severino, and Quintana. Like, those names. Jose Buto is another name that, if he has a good spring, he could crack the rotation, especially if an injury comes up, but really, it's just going to be, I think, a shaky rotation all year long. Yeah. There's just not a lot of talent that scares me, because I don't see Severino or Manaea having like these bounce-back years. I don't see it happening.
What happened to Scherzer and Verlander?
Yeah, no, with Severino, I mean, it was a velocity issue, which is coming from an injury. Like, there's no worse pitcher you can go get than a guy who's struggling to throw nearly as hard as he used to due to something in his throwing arm. There's no fixing that besides healing the arm, which he's shown kind of can't heal at the pace it should be.
Oh, well, paying him $11 million, too.
Yeah, that's not going to help either.
And then even a guy like Manaea, who has been a solid pitcher in his career, has had good seasons, but I mean, just looking at his last couple of years, he's really kind of just floated around between Oakland in 2021, then he went to San Diego in 22, and then last year he was with the Giants, and he only started 10 games. So really just became like a big issue, and I just don't see where he's pitching a lot less innings. He's just not the pitcher that he once was and can't deliver in the same way that he used to. So if he's going to be in the rotation, I just don't really see an avenue where he's going to end up being like a really nice piece for the Mets. He did shave the beard and get a haircut, though. I mean, do we have thoughts on that? Because he looks like a completely different person. And maybe that's what he's going for. He's going to go completely different look, completely different pitcher. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just grasping at straws.
I like the play. I like cutting the hair off, trying to change up the mojo a little bit. You know, you gotta change something.
He said he hadn't cut his hair, I think, in 4 years. That's a 4 years.
It didn't look that long.
Oh,
4 years.
If you, I mean, the picture
more
that,
recently, it was.
If you look at a side by side, like it was crazy. Yeah, go take a look at that. But I mean, Tyler McGill has been an opening day starter before. I think
two years ago.
It was 1 year where like Scherzer couldn't go on opening day, so McGill ended up throwing, but he's been there for a while. But I think Mets fans are just done with seeing Tyler McGill. I mean, they kind of understand that he's not going to really be in a lot of high leverage spots if he's having an ERA in the upper fours. He just hasn't put it together really ever. And in 25 games started last year, he was a below-average pitcher. And there's no real reason to not believe that's going to happen again. But looking up and down elsewhere, did you find that picture, by the way?
Yeah. It's way longer than the last time I saw him on the field.
Right? Like, I don't even know how you, like, walk around with that.
The thickness is what it is. It's like a mane.
The one thing that can, I think, help the Mets a lot, and I don't think people are putting enough like emphasis on this, because the Mets, talent-wise, aren't very good, but they're getting back.
Yeah,
well,
Edwin Diaz.
They traded for a bunch of prospects too. So.
They got a bunch of prospects, and like those are going to be exciting. But how many of those guys are going to be MLB ready this year? I'm not sure. But getting Edwin Diaz back, that's huge, because now you have a lockdown closer again, and a guy who can really just be depended on in late innings. And there was kind of like a struggle with that at points last year too. So
yeah, I mean, but if you're the Mets this year, you're going to struggle with going into a lead with going into the ninth inning at this rate.
Yeah, you're right, because like this pitching staff, I mean, could give up like 7 runs a game or like 6 runs a game, and that's hard to really attain winning by.
It is good if you're a Mets fan to see that Diaz is pitching well, though. We see a lot of people come back from injuries, although he was an ACL, right? He's like jumping up and down.
In the World Baseball Classic. Yeah. Odd, crazy to think about.
Odd injury for a baseball pitcher, but it's really good to see. I saw a report that he was mowing down Lindor, Bader, and Alonso, struck them all out in live ABs. So I guess that's good for one side, which is the pitching, and bad if you're the hitters. But it's Edwin Diaz. Like, hopefully he's the Edwin Diaz he used to be. But like you said, you're going to struggle getting the lead into that spot. I feel bad for the Mets. You lose Diaz, you get Senga, you lose Senga, you get Diaz. You can't have them both.
They just can't have, like, everything going well at the same time, ever. And it's like they have, like, a legitimate ace because Senga was really good last year, and then he's just going to be out. And last year they got Verlander, and he missed opening day. He had, like, an armpit strain or something in, like, that area. So they didn't get anything out of Scherzer last year really either. And they broke it all down by the deadline. So there's a lot of concerns with the Mets pitching. And, yeah, the injury to Senga doesn't really help any of that. And then from there, it's just looking like mediocre starter. He can maybe give you 5 innings and, like, 4 runs. But, yeah, I don't think on the pitching side the Mets are going to have a lot of success. I think the offense has a chance to be productive again. But overall, you're not going to win a lot of games if your pitching staff is giving up like six runs a game. So on the topic of pitching, I think this is really interesting. And look at a team like the Boston Red Sox, okay? They've had one of the weirdest off seasons in recent memory, where they're obviously a big market team with needs, but they just won't go after like starting pitching. They won't do it. Their top signing to address this hole in pitching that they have was Lucas Giolito, who also didn't have a very good year last year between the White Sox, and then he was with the Angels, and then he was dumped off to like the Guardians, I think, by the end of the year. Just not a good year all around. And now he might miss the entire season with a UCL injury. Just what a disaster for the Boston Red Sox. Their top signing on the pitching side, and he's just gone in the spring training.
Yeah, I think, you know, it kind of just goes to speak as the Red Sox as a whole. You kind of think about it, you know, Devers kind of spoke out during the beginning of the season, like, look, this is the team that I signed for, and, you know, we kind of stink. So, unfortunately for the Red Sox, you couldn't really expect Lucas Giolito to be your ace in general based on the year he had last year. He played with three teams.
Yeah.
But it is a blow to the Red Sox because they put a decent amount of money for him.
It's very similar to the Mets. Like, what are you doing? Are you going to do anything? Because the Red Sox were really bad last year, and all they did was lose Verdugo. They lost one of their better hitters, although it was a little bit of a down year for him. Obviously one of your better players, and it's a really bad look when Devers comes out and says that this is a bad team that I've signed to. You don't want your best player telling the media that your team isn't talented enough for him. So just all negatives for the Red Sox. Yeah, I can't see a single positive.
The quote from Devers where he's like, yeah, I think we know what like areas need to be addressed. Yeah. But, I mean, I don't want to beat a dead horse with this, but you look at the free agent market and
right. –
Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery are still out there. And both those names have been linked to the Red Sox recently. So is this just where ownership just puts the foot down and says, all right, we need a guy. Let's go get Blake Snell. Let's go get Jordan Montgomery.
I think so. Unless they really don't think they could compete in the East, which makes sense to me.
Which I don't think they can.
They can't. If they get Blake Snell, they can't. They still can't compete.
They're already 14
teams
competing
with the Orioles and the they just can't. So I guess maybe there's no really tanking in baseball because the draft process is completely different. But I guess it's more like why go spend that money to have a couple more wins? Maybe I don't know. I guess it's one of those thoughts. Doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, and it's just a weird how the Red Sox operate, where they're in the Boston sports market. They're in a huge like capital for sports, where it's not a lack of funds. They just don't want to do it, but they have enough money to get Tyler O'Neill, though. They have enough money to sign him to a contract.
Oh, that guy. I mean, that guy was good. Let's say in 2021, he had a 6.3 WAR, and then ever since then, he's been hurt the past 2 years. So this guy was also a Gold Glove defender too in left field. And where is he going to play now?
Yoshida's
in left field.
It's just, I don't know what the Red Sox are really doing, but you have Snell and Montgomery out there. So if the Red Sox really want to add anything, they can. And really, really quickly before we kind of wrap up here, I mean, Snell and Montgomery is still on the market. I don't know what Scott Boras is doing because at this point, it's March 8th. These pitchers are not going to be ready if they're signed. They're not going to be ready for opening day. So they've really done themselves a huge disservice. Scott Boras has really dropped the ball with this, where his asking price has been too high, and now spring training's come along, and teams need to, like, know who they're going into opening day with. And right now, it doesn't seem like Snell or Montgomery are factoring to either of those equations for either guy.
Well, I think, you know, you kind of have to look at it this way. You know, it's based on not exactly the amount per year they're asking for. It's the amount of years they're asking for. And for both guys, I think Scott Boras, you know, based off of 2023, they're going to want long-term contracts for each guys. But if you look at if you look at Blake Snell's years over his career, he's only had 2 years with the sub-3 ERA and only one other year with an ERA below 3.3. So there's really not enough consistency to prove that, he's going to be a good pitch, like the same guy that he was last year down the road. Jordan Montgomery, same thing. I mean, 2022, he had a 3.63 ERA. 20, 2023, his ERA was slightly lower than that. I mean, he has been consistent, and he was great in the postseason. He's also not a guy that's going to blow you out. So those guys, given long-term contracts like that, Jordan Montgomery's probably going to get a four-year contract at best. Same with Blake Snell. That's what teams are going to want to give out based on the production from these guys over the past couple of years. So it's really, I think, Scott Boras just kind of wants to give them the years, and teams are just not buying in.
Yeah, neither of them are aces by any. I mean, Blake Snell was an ace.
Yeah, he is,
for sure.
I mean, Blake Snell is an ace.
They are. Blake Snell's an ace. He was last year. You were saying how he can be inconsistent. I don't think, like you said, I don't think he has crazy blowaway stuff. Maybe the asking price is too much, but there's so many teams that could use even Blake Snell at his worst year. A Blake Snell that's pitching around a 4.5 ERA. Like, there's so many teams that could use a guy like that in their roster. I guess
Yankees could use that.
Everybody could use that somewhere in your roster, in your lineup. I mean, or not your lineup, in your rotation.
They say you can't ever have enough pitching, but
right.
It seems like everyone's just like, no, I'm good on
Snell. It's got to be the money.
It has to be the money, and it's also just the timing, because at this point, like, why would anyone just make that investment when neither of them are going to be ready for opening day?
Well, I think, you know, you kind of look at the Blake Snell thing, too. He's been hurt every single year. Since his 2018 Cy Young season, at least one time during the season, he's been hurt every single year. And the best production on the field is when the best ability for a player is availability. And Blake Snell hasn't really gone into free agency enough to prove that he's consistently able to be available. And when he is, he's one of the best pitchers out there.
It's just a weird situation. And the Red Sox, I feel like, but it's also weird for the Red Sox because these guys are both Boras clients. So it's like if Boras signs one of them like in this opening, like it's weird. But I don't know if that causes any friction between the players and the agent. But we covered a lot today. I feel like this is a good place to leave off opening day. As we mentioned earlier, less than 3 weeks away. So that's really exciting. We're gearing up for the MLB season. A big shout out to Grace McCarron, our producer behind the glass. You can catch Nosebleeds on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast. From Evan Harkin and Sebastian Seabach, I am Brian Rabeck saying thank you so much for listening to the Nosebleeds podcast. And Nosebleeds is a production of WFUV Sports.